You're listening to The Green on Delaware Public Media, and I'm your host, Tom Byrne. We continue our 2018 election coverage by digging a bit deeper into the races with Delaware Public Media political analysts, Republican Tom Kovac and Democrat Darrell Scott. Kovac is a former North Wilmington State Representative and Newcastle County Council President, and he previously ran for U.S. House. Scott is a former state rep from the Dover area. This week, we get their take on the statewide races in the first state on November 6th. Well, let's start at the top of the ballots. UD Center for Political Communication poll last month found Senator Tom Carper holds a 61-24% lead over Rob Arlett in the U.S. Senate race. Congresswoman Lisa Blunt Rochester, a 52-28% advantage over Scott Walker in the U.S. House race. First, I have to ask both of you, and I'll start with you, Tom. Is it surprising that Scott Walker is faring better than Rob Arlett, at least in this one poll?
Well, a lot of things are surprising about Scott Walker and his candidacy. The fact that he is the primary chosen candidate for the Republican Party, having run as a Democrat 2 years before, having a name recognition that's potentially based on a similar named very famous Republican out in the Midwest, Governor Scott Walker. You know, who knows what got things going? You know, was it folks rejecting, going for Rob Arlett, who got folks fired up against the other Republican candidate in the primary? Regardless, Scott Walker won the primary and is a candidate. Quite frankly, is he drawing on the support of Trump voters? Hey, this guy's from the outside. We don't care what he does in his real estate, holdings or is alleged to have done. And we like this person fighting against the system. You know, that could definitely have some appeal to an everyman voter and could explain some popularity. I mean, there's always been that kind of fascination and support of an everyman, especially somebody who's not perfect. I mean, that kind of goes against the conventional wisdom of squeaky clean political candidate, but with our current president, we can see that sometimes people don't necessarily go that direction.
Darrell?
Like my friend Tom, I was a little surprised, but again, when you look at, and some of the things you said, Tom, when you look at the political landscape and the willingness for people to support anybody who is sort of contrary and sort of outside of the political norm, it's hard to be shocked these days. I was a little surprised. I was trying to look at the differences in the poll numbers between Arlett and Walker, and I think that among Democrats there was a slight difference in preference between the two, but although very slight. So it's again not really surprised, but again, sort of it may be a sign of the times that the more extreme you are, the more likely you are to stand out.
Let me just talk a little bit more broadly about what we make of Walker. He was disavowed by the GOP, the state party, after saying some things that were pretty racist and sexist on Facebook. Has also been flagged, as Tom alluded to, in media reports about issues involving properties he rents out to low-income people. Yet, on the other side of the coin, he showed up for our Delaware debates, produced with the University of Delaware Center for Political Communication, and all, by all accounts, performed as reasonably well as most candidates who show up for those type of debates. So I guess in the end, the question becomes, has he or has he not been a distraction for the GOP in trying to kind of coalesce its supporters behind its candidates writ large?
I guess the way I would respond is I'm not sure of the overall impact. I think that what's surprising when I've read some of the press and stories about the Republican Party and sort of disavowing and the resignation of the party chair, you've got those in the party that are sort of dissatisfied with the new Castle County Republicans and sort of support of the moderate Republican, socially progressive and fiscally conservative, and the Sussex Republicans, who are, I would describe it as sort of Tea Party and anti-establishment, and see him as representing. So I think it has caused a fraction in the party. I think that not having a strong coordinated ticket at the top of the ticket on your statewides will have an impact down ticket to to down ticket races.
Tom, is this just another symptom of a fracture that's already there in the state GOP party, or is this something different?
Well, you know, as we've talked about and I've seen discussed, you know, a lot in Delaware politics, you know, we've had this, you know, alleged fracture in the Republican Party, and there are absolutely differing views on, you know, how the Republican Party should go as a party. One of the problems with the Republican Party and one of the strengths of the Republican Party is its independence, and they foster that and encourage that. But you do have more of the Newcastle-leaning, willing to work across the aisle, and the, you know, Western Sussex branded, you know, come hell or high water, we're fighting for our cause type of mentality. But it's no different than really than any organization, and including the Democratic Party, who's facing their own battles of folks willing to work across, you know, the aisles, willing to get things done. You know, looking no further than, you know, our Senator Coons in the recent confirmation hearings, you know, trying to broker deals with people.
Mm-hmm.
He was celebrated as a hero and lambasted as a traitor by his party. You know, I think both parties are facing this problem. The Republican one in Delaware gets talked about more often because Democrats are still winning for now.
That's a good point.
And it is. I think the point you make is that you've got progressives in the party, and so Evelyn Harris's Harris's campaign,
yep.
And the question is, will they come out to vote in November with since their candidate lost, right? And so the question is, how do you, you know, sort of bring them into the fold, and you know, Carper taking a position in support of $15 minimum wage and legalization of marijuana, I think, you know, is a demonstration of willingness and effort.
Olive branch.
An olive branch, yes. And so then the question becomes, you know, will they come out again? So
and that's honestly the same dynamic we saw last presidential election with the Bernie Sanders people and the Hillary Clinton people, just kind of playing out at this level 2 years later.
Absolutely.
When will that fracture, you know, occur? I'm going to support somebody that's 80% of what I want. And that's, you know, again, while the party, the Democratic Party, is still winning in Delaware, it's going to, and it has been facing that, you know, that issue, and will face it more so in the future. You know, the GOP just got a jump start on it thanks to the 2010 election cycle.
Fair enough. But I, just to move forward on this, then, you know, because, well, I guess what we're saying now is that maybe there's an issue in the Democratic Party as well, but it's not showing up at the ballot box just yet. It is in the GOP, and the question now is, for this particular election, is that top of the ticket, Rob Arlett, Scott Walker, a drag on those down ballot, state treasurer, state auditor, where, you know, Ken Simpler, James Spitola would seem to have a shot at winning, perhaps if they had some coattails to run on?
Well, you know, I'll address this one, Tom, first. I think that, you know, you'd have no greater potential drag on a local election process than the President of the United States. And I'm not, actually, at this point, I'm not even Trump bashing in the slightest. I think that's a very common midterm election cycle, that, you know, you come in and you have a huge, you know, counter new president election cycle, both on the national level when the majority, it's the biggest number of United States congressmen, United States representatives lose their seats that are the same party as the president. That happens every, you know, off election cycle of a new president. So I think that's going to be a huge battle to overcome always in every state, including Delaware. The only thing that stopped that from happening in 2010, as we talked about, was another phenomenon which was interjected into our local election. So I think the Republicans are definitely and should be concerned about that issue. But the reason I brought up the 2010 election is because Delawareans looked at their local candidates when by 49 out of the 50 states lost state House seats for Democrats. They lost state House seats for Democrats after Barack Obama was elected two years later in the state elections. Delaware was the only state in the union to say, we don't give a crap about national elections. We're going to care more about our local elected folks. And you didn't have that swing back against the president. So I think where local Republicans have done a good job, Delaware, has shown, and I have faith that Delaware will elect good local representatives and senators. It doesn't mean it's not tougher, and I think that not having a good, likable president definitely hurts, and I think that not having a super coordinated ticket definitely hurts. But Delaware voters have shown that they're educated enough about their local reps to still elect them despite national and top-of-the-ticket shenanigans.
Darrell, to that point, is the potential for a blue wave more likely to impact this election than the top-of-the-ticket, maybe weakness for GOP? Does one hold more weight in your mind?
I like to think maybe there's a perfect storm there, but in reality, I think that the blue wave, the turnout that we saw for Democrats in the primary would indicate sort of strong interest, and we believe there were new voters brought to the table from the Harris campaign. The conversation I've had with those running the coordinated campaign for the Democrats are seeing sort of strong interest, propensity or sort of affirming their willingness and plan to vote, seeing more of a tribalism or partisanship in sort of their thought process. So where they might have in the past been thinking of, I may switch, mm-hmm. sort of, go down the ticket and make a choice of being more, it may be a referendum on Trump, it may be a combination of factors, but looking at and saying, I'm going to vote, straight Democratic ticket. And I think that, again, when you have Republican candidates at the top that are aligning themselves with the president, given the unfavorables that exist, it doesn't help, right? And so maybe, as Tom said, on the local level, if they've raised money, they've run good campaigns, they've been out doing the door knocking and the retail politics that are necessary, they may be able to make that message. From a statewide perspective, without strong turnout statewide, then you look at Simpler, you look at Spadola, and say that there could be some challenges there for those two candidates.
I want to let's talk specifically about those two individuals. How much danger is Ken Simpler, incumbent state treasurer, who did kind of buck registration and all the other trends and win state treasurer 4 years ago? How much danger is he in of losing, and does some of the noise around that particular race, including a Democratic complaint that he and Republican State Senator Greg Lavelle inappropriately coordinated with PACs, does that have an impact? Or is that too inside baseball for most voters?
Well, I'll ask Tom if he thinks his Republican rock star will successfully surf the blue wave. So, Tom, you want to take that first?
Sure. Ken Simpler was elected pretty handily on a very, very simple message. Looking back 4 years, remember that message looked like it was going to be anti-incumbent, anti-incumbent, anti-incumbent. But Simpler wrote on a keep it simple, vote finance guy, finance job. And from what I've seen, he's campaigned the same way this time. Finance guy, finance job. We've had had the abacus before, Ken Simpler came in and took over as treasurer, and, the smartphone with the apps, doing a better job investing states' resources, on the second picture. I haven't heard anything negative, run by the Simpler campaign. It's been very simple. It's been very straightforward. Finance guy, finance job. By the way, look what I've done. And as a matter of fact, I saw, and if I'm not mistaken, an editorial by Simpler is this overblown partisanship is crap. Yes, I'm a Republican, but I'm here to do the best job that I can. I'm not here to bash Democrats. I'm here to help be the best state treasurer I can be. So, does that message still resonate in a hyper-partisan climate? that we have, you know, again, from the president on down. Clearly, Simpler is not endorsing or picking up on the national Republican issues. He is trying to ignore them and focus on what he's done for Delaware and the importance of having him in that position. You know, that's what I see in the straight state treasurer race. Daryl?
So I was going to ask you if you thought that, you know, again, as Paul Ryan has done and others at the national level have failed to call out members of their own party for some of the, you know, the knuckleheaded things that they've said and done. And so Simpler, while you say, I agree, I mean, he ran on a very, you know, hire me, I'm a finance guy for a finance job and trying to keep it very simple and straightforward. He also got some crossover vote. And so does he get sort of lumped in with, you know, this partisanship by failing to stand up to his party and call out some of those shenanigans to demonstrate that he is, you know, he's the guy that that's going to work across party lines and stand up to the sort of the, you know, the fractions of the party that are far removed from sort of the norm.
Yeah, I mean, Daryl, that's an interesting question. I mean, we have that come up all the time. What duty is there for an elected official or somebody seeking office to call out the shenanigans of another elected official, you know, nationally, locally, globally, you know, if they do something that they shouldn't do? I mean, unfortunately, we often have elected officials letting the power go to their head and doing things that they shouldn't do nationally and regionally. You know, whose duty is it to call them out? You know, if you're a member of that party, do you have to separate yourself from them? Certainly the other party likes to tell you have to do that until they have a problem in their own party. You know, does every state representative have to come out and say, oh, what so-and-so candidate did as a Democrat was wrong? Or do they run their own race?
And is there a risk also if Simpler does do that, he then alienates some of the more conservative people on the Republican side, and maybe they don't, they're not going to vote for the Democrat. They just sit out, and you lose the vote. Lose votes there.
It is a risk. I think that for those of us on my side of the aisle that see Simpler as the head of the Republican Party, right, sort of the future, you know, who if not him, to, you know, to say that we need to broaden the, you know, sort of the umbrella and reach to make sure that we're appealing. And, you know, with a registration disadvantage, you've got to get independent and Democratic votes mm-hmm. to win on a statewide basis. And so but that was just a question and thinking yeah. about it. I think that there are some differences in Simpler and Davis and sort of backgrounds. And I think she's got a compelling, you know, personal narrative that's being told. I see this as a barn burner of a race. I think it's going to be close and one of the ones we'll watch and talk a lot about on election night.
Tom, you agree? It does seem like that as you said, Ken Simpler's message previously as a non-incumbent now kind of combined with his ability to say, well, here's what I've done, and, you know, I did what I said I was going to do. Does still make him a formidable candidate in this race, particularly against someone who, even though, you know, the UD poll would indicate that you know Ken Simpler doesn't have a high level of name recognition, he certainly has a lot more name recognition than Conley Davis.
Right.
And to Daryl's point, you know, I think it will be a race to watch. I think it will be, you know, a bellwether. One election year it goes to, historically in Delaware, lean to the right, then to the left, then to the right. Well, looking back in, you know, the 70s and 80s and 90s and Castle and Carper, these folks won by about the same percentage almost every time. You know, and will Delaware voters stick with that trend and vote for somebody that they believe can do the best job? Or is the hyper-partisanship reached the Delaware level? And I think that Simpler's race will bear that out. You know, if he still wins by a comfortable margin, then people say, okay, well, here in our small little state of Delaware, everybody knows everybody, you know, I'm going to vote for the candidate that I think could do the best job. Or is it because Davis comes in, you know, more of an unknown with little name recognition, if she prevails, it will more than likely, and no slight to her, but more than likely would be the result of a blue wave. And is that what's going to control state elections from now on?
And I guess that takes us to the auditor's race. And I guess we're talking almost about the kind of same type of thing with James Spadola, someone who, you know, even in previous runs for state Senate has run kind of more as a Castle-like moderate Republican. You know, does he have an opportunity to win here? And I guess, you know, does the fact that the retiring state auditor, Republican Tom Wagner, decided to bring him in as a deputy in the final weeks of the campaign help, hurt, or is that a non-factor as well? Is it really just about, you know, can James Spadola, like Ken Simpler, simply kind of get people to be feel like that he's the best person for the job and, you know, ignore the D and the R, you know, just vote for the person and the policy?
I mean, when I saw that announcement, I'm sitting there going, why? Why would you do that? I mean, in the last 2 weeks of the election, you should be up and down the state. I mean, as I tell candidates, your two jobs are voter contact and raising money, right? And in the latter part, hopefully you've raised the money and you're just doing what you can to make sure you get out the vote. To add an appointment as the deputy, I just don't know what the goal was in that, other than maybe when McGinnis, if she wins, that she has to let him go, right? So there's a visual for that. But I just think it's a distraction. And one, to me, it seemed to be a concession of defeat for the race. The other difference between Simpler, one, he's loaned himself, you know, money as he's able to, but he's raised a significant amount of money. Yeah. He's well positioned to message and, you know, deliver a message as it relates to his campaign. Spadola has underperformed that's a tough race to raise money.
Sure, absolutely.
But he just hasn't done enough, I think, to get the traction he needs. So I think McGinnis name recognition, sort of winning in a primary, raising money, communicating.
And she also ran for lieutenant governor, so she had a little infrastructure ahead of time as well.
Absolutely, and then she's raised money to be able to sort of communicate effectively in that race. So I just saw it as a distraction, and and again, with the other factors involved, sort of top of ticket, not raising money, and not really seeing much of a campaign, that I think he's in trouble.
Tom, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think, since it's Delaware, we can be very personal. I think that James Spadola has shown himself to be a very strong, good candidate running as himself and running as a Castle type of Republican. He came in and ran against Harris McDowell, who is a Democratic stalwart, you know, untouchable. Nobody would even run against him. And Spadola fared very well, you know, compared to expectations. You know, the auditor candidate for the Republicans, you know, drops out. And, you know, who's going to pick up the mantle? Well, you have this young man who's clearly committed to public service, you know, from his post, his prior position, you know, as a Newark police officer, and doing it in a way that's different, doing it in a way that reaches community and shows love and connection for the community. You know, he jumps in as auditor because he has a financial background and wants to give people a choice. You know, in a normal election cycle when everything's equal, I think that type of candidate can be very appealing. And I look forward to James running again, you know, just like the Kathleen Jennings did did running as lieutenant governor, then running again for a race, if he's not able to prevail in this race. But as Daryl said, how much excitement can be raised over state auditor when, A, nobody really exactly knows what that position is and is really supposed to do, and B, haven't we had the same guy do that? Like, can't we just keep that same guy doing that so we don't have to worry about it and vote for him again?
Then finally, the answer to that question is no. I do want to wrap up on the statewide stuff with the AG's race, which really seems to have just kind of like disappeared since the primary. You have the Democrat turned Republican Bernard Pepekai against the Democrat Kathy Jennings. Obviously, Jennings did well in the primary, and a lot of that was because she had name recognition, she had fundraise, she had a lot of advantages. Is it fair to say that those advantages hold here, and Pepekai has little or no chance to pull an upset off in this race?
short answer for me is yes. I think Jennings has proven to be an effective campaigner. She's raised money again since the election and recently announced former Vice President Joe Biden's endorsement. So there's a little bit of excitement about, and again, name recognition is sort of the opportunity to affiliate or, you know, sort of you know, be affiliated with. Yeah, Joe. You'll remember his name soon, buddy.
Yeah, you know, that's an incredibly uphill race, and one that, you know, Republicans are still scratching their head about, you know, regardless of the candidate themselves. You know, he kind of came to the rescue to be another candidate, mm-hmm. but from a very, very Democrat position. It's good to have, you know, I think it's good to have contested races and you know, that the voters have a choice come election day, which I think we have too little of down ballot in Delaware. So I'll never dissuade somebody from stepping in and running, even if they're, quote, not a Republican, true Republican or this or that. But, you know, in a very uphill battle anyway, running as a Republican, to have a Democrat switch over, difficult. But does Bernard Pepikai have any advantages that a Republican wouldn't in running this sort of race? You know, can he get the attention to enough people of the fact that he actually isn't a Republican, but he's running in a Republican slot because he thinks he can do a better job for the job? You know, does he have support in areas, you know, where Republicans aren't even on the ballot,
mm-hmm.
and then that Bernard Pepikai, being a Democrat, can draw support from? Because statewide candidates, you know, we don't want to go back into the treasurer and auditor race, but where they're running in a district with no Republican candidates down ballot, that's very difficult. You know, does Bernard Pepikai actually have an advantage there, being a Democrat, being able to establish connections with voting blocs, especially in our urban areas?
Thanks to Delaware Public Media political analysts Tom Kovac and Daryl Scott. We'll hear more from them next week when they examine some of the key General Assembly races and during our election night coverage Tuesday, November 6th. And we wrap up The Green next with another arts playlist, looking at an exhibition offered by the historic Odessa Foundation. This is The Green on Delaware Public Media.